Welcome to another edition of Locked On NBA. Today, we'll talk about how tonight's games impact the Eastern Conference playoff race, specifically Indiana's win versus Milwaukee and Cleveland's win over Detroit, and then the Jazz pulling out a much-needed victory in order to continue their push for the postseason.
Then we'll get the latest news on J.J. Redick's impending free agency, trouble in paradise for Kawhi Leonard, and how the NBA could soon be involved in how the top high school players make their way to the league. It's Locked On NBA. Thank you so much for listening and for subscribing. Now let's get to the show.
You are Locked On the NBA, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
All right, let's do this. My name is Wes Goldberg. I'm a credentialed writer covering the NBA for the Step Back and FanRag Sports. You can find me on Twitter at WC Goldberg.
And I'm David Ramil, credential NBA writer who's covered the league at large for SB Nation, FanSided, and FanRag Sports. And you can follow me and my writing on Twitter at DRamil13.
A lot of games tonight that had some impact on the Eastern Conference playoff race. Let's start with this game between the Indiana Pacers and Milwaukee Bucks. Indiana beating Milwaukee 92-89. Bojan Bogdanovic going off for 29 points on 5 of 7 shooting from 3-point range. Giannis, only 18 points for him on 7 of 16 shooting. Not the biggest night for him. I want to talk about Giannis and Eric Bledsoe and their performance a little bit later. But look, this is going to be this is a really big win for Indiana, who, look, they, despite losing Paul George, obviously, and not being the deepest team in the East, just continue to rise up the Eastern Conference standings.
They're finding a way to win games. I think it's a remarkable season for them, given the fact that most people expected them to be outright bad this season. But here they are, continuing to climb their way up the Eastern Conference standings in the top four seeds at this point. They're 7-3 in their last 10 games, and just a half game back of Cleveland, who's holding on to the third seed in the Eastern Conference. So pretty impressive. And look, on a night like tonight, when Victor Oladipo, their all-star, only shot 5 of 19, finished with 14 points, and somehow they were able to find it. Look, Bogdanovic had a huge night. Certainly that was the difference. Obviously, it came down to a last-second shot by Giannis Antetokounmpo that rimmed out. He didn't connect on that three-pointer there. Could have tied the game. But at the same time, just you have to give credit to the Pacers. And I think you had some points, as we were discussing it earlier, about how their coach, Nate McMillan, has really done a phenomenal job that nobody's talking about.
Yeah, I mean, quietly doing a good job there. He was hired after Frank Vogel to sort of flip the script in a way. You know, Frank Vogel was a defensive-first coach, and McMillan, obviously, was an offensive-minded coach. And in that first year with Paul George, it didn't really work. Paul George kind of morphed into Carmelo Anthony 2.0, was taking, like, a lot of inefficient shots. The offense didn't look great. You kind of wondered, why did they even hire this guy in the first place? Right. And now it's really starting to show this year. I mean, they do a fantastic job of just moving the ball, finding good looks. You know, they do a great job of moving the ball in and out of the paint. It starts with Oladipo and even Lance Stevenson to another degree. Corey Joseph did a nice job for them tonight, getting into the paint, kicking out to open teammates, just making sure that when they do take a shot, it's a good shot. They work hard. You know, this is a team that works hard for good looks. This isn't the Warriors. This isn't the Rockets that have just like ISO guys who could just take on a defense one-on-one. But you look at what they're doing in Indiana, their point differential is better than the Washington Wizards, who have had, you know, the largest time of possession over the fourth seed, right, as of this point of the season. But Indiana's just sort of they've just done enough. Their defense is just good enough. Their offense is just good enough, and they're doing. And you know, maybe this wouldn't be the case in the Western Conference, but in the East, they're formidable. You know, this is a team that is right now fourth in the Eastern Conference, and rightfully so. But
are you a believer in the Indiana Pacers and their potential playoff seeding?
I mean, I'm a believer that they'll make the playoffs.
Well,
I don't.
Sure. I mean, that seems. Like I wonder
what happens in the postseason when defenses lock in on Victor Oladipo even more than they're doing now. I just don't. I feel like in the playoffs, these teams just don't have a good track record. I mean, I don't know what the expectation is. Do they make it out of one round? Do they maintain this fourth seed? I don't know. But for me, like, the biggest story of this game was Milwaukee. It just,
yeah.
You watch this team and you thought that they would make a bigger leap. Maybe after Jason Kidd was just obviously did a horrendous coaching job to start the season. And he was fired in the middle of the year. I don't know how much better off they have been since. I mean, the defense is, it was sort of fixed, but I think maybe that was like a Ewing theory thing happening because it sort of regressed back and they still have all the same issues. I mean, I think it's a personnel issue in Milwaukee at the end of the day for defense. They just don't have rim protection, and that sort of seeps into everything else that they can and can't do on that end. But offensively, the fourth quarter happens. The fourth quarter is underway. It's a close game the entire fourth quarter. And the Bucks just play after play. They're running the same high pick and roll between Eric Bledsoe and Giannis Antetokounmpo. And you'd say, okay, yeah, that's great. That should work, you know, between those two. Why? How couldn't you score in that? Well, if you run it literally over and over, like back-to-back-to-back-to-back possessions, Indiana's going to figure it out. And this isn't this isn't the first time. Like, this is – watch any fourth quarter game. Watch any Milwaukee game in the fourth quarter. This is what they do in the fourth quarter. They revert back to Bledsoe, Giannis pick and rolls, high pick and rolls, and where Giannis is setting the screen and Bledsoe's coming around. Like they don't even flip it around. You know, it's the same play over and over again. The film is out on it. It hasn't been as effective as they probably are hoping for if you're going to run it every friggin' play. And especially when you have guys like Chris Middleton who could shoot from the perimeter, Jabari Parker, who's back and looks pretty good, and is as far as scoring offensively, and you're not getting any of those guys involved. You're just running that same play over and over again. It's almost malpractice for head coaching. It's confusing.
Well, the Bucks have dropped to eighth in the Eastern Conference seeding, and they're 4-6 in their last 10 games. So they could find themselves spiraling all the way down to the eighth seed at this point. With another loss tonight, the Detroit Pistons look like they're firmly out of the playoff picture in the East. So you wonder whether or not the Bucks will do just enough to hold on to their eighth seed, or if they can find a way to turn it around. But let's move on to another game on the night. The Cleveland Cavaliers pulling out that victory over the Detroit Pistons, going 112 over Detroit's 90. Cleveland looked pretty good tonight.
Yeah, Larry Nance had his first start. Tristan Thompson's out for about a week. So Larry Nance starts in his place, scores 22 points on 9 of 15 shooting, had 15 rebounds, one assist and two steals. And I thought he really put an imprint early on in the game. He had 11 points and 7 rebounds in the first 10 minutes before he was subbed out. I mean, this is something that people have been thinking about is Larry Nance just a better starter than Tristan Thompson with how this roster is constructed, especially when you get a guy like Kevin Love back who adds a little bit more size there. And you're able to shift LeBron back to the three. And just Larry Nance's ability to just dive to the rim, you know, and create some vertical spacing there for LeBron as far as having a lob threat there, which Tristan Thompson really isn't that, you know. I think you saw that on display tonight between Nance. With Nance being the starter, he got a lot of minutes next to LeBron, and it looked good.
Yeah, my feeling is that Nance's defense is still a problem, and I think Tristan Thompson, even though he hasn't been as good this year as he has been in past seasons, is still a plus defender and certainly can help in a number of ways that I don't think Nance can defensively. And I think you're going to have enough of a problem when Kevin Love does return, and because of his defensive problems that are pretty well noted, I think you need somebody like Tristan Thompson out there to kind of help balance that out and provide a little bit more of a defensive anchor, something that Nance doesn't provide at this point in his career. That's not to say that he can't. It just hasn't necessarily been a point of emphasis for him during his first couple of seasons with the Lakers. And he's kind of just making that adjustment now to the Cavaliers. So I'm not sure if he's the better option. He's a hell of a spark plug coming off the bench, and I think they'll continue to use him that way.
I gotta disagree and say he's about as good as a defender as Tristan Thompson. I think he's a little bit more slight than Thompson, so maybe he's not offering you the same sort of rim protection. I don't know if he's even – they're probably about the same height at this point. But Larry, like, I'm looking at his defensive box plus minus on Basketball Reference, and granted it's an 8-game sample size in Cleveland, but he's got a DBPM of 3, which is Kawhi Leonard type, you know, scores. So, you know, I think he probably offers you as much as Tristan Thompson, and I think the defense is broken – either way, I think you might be better off having Tristan sort of be that spark plug off the bench who sort of can rebound for you and be a little bit more of a situational player. And maybe then that way you're able to get a little bit more out of Nance offensively. I don't know. But look, Cleveland,
I think
they took care of business today. They beat Detroit by 22 points. So,
yeah. But I think that's more indicative of where the Pistons are right now. They've lost games over the weekend to the Orlando Magic and Miami Heat. They just haven't really found an answer, even though the acquisition of Blake Griffin was supposed to help turn his team around. It really hasn't. The only games they've won of late have been against teams on the second night of a back-to-back. So they're really beating up on weaker, more exhausted teams. And I was able to cover them in Orlando, and there's a dysfunction about that group there. They're trying to keep it lighthearted, but at the same time, they just don't seem to work very well together and can't seem to find a way to turn it around. So as far as Cleveland, though, I have concerns. I just don't know that they're necessarily a legitimate powerhouse. I know you can't discount LeBron James being able to pull this team out of the Eastern Conference and into the finals yet again for a fourth straight season. Well, for an eighth straight season for him. But as far as, you know, this Cavaliers team trying to make these changes with Nance late in the season, that kind of speaks to me as of a little bit disastrous, to be honest with you, that they're making these kinds of changes, that they don't have a firm rotation set, you know, with another 20 games left in the season. But that's an issue for Ty Lue to figure out if he'll ever make that change. Now, this is another big game tonight. The Utah Jazz holding on to a 94-80 victory over the Orlando Magic. A really big game from Rudy Gobert, who had a huge showing there, was really the difference there. Orlando's shooters just couldn't capitalize. Really, really bad performances from both Evan Fournier and Aaron Gordon, both of whom shot 4 of 18 today.
Gobert in particular, he's been on something else since he came back from injury. I mean, in this game against Orlando, 21 points on 10 shots. He had 17 rebounds, 2 blocks. I mean, this is... It's the sort of – he's just been dominant on both ends of the floor. I mean, he is – obviously, he's a dominant defensive player. I mean, this is a guy who's defensive player of the year material, right, and has been in those conversations for the last couple seasons. But offensively, what he's doing, especially with the efficiency he's playing, I mean, this is a guy who does nothing flashy. You know, this isn't Anthony Davis. This isn't Karl Anthony Towns. This isn't Joel Embiid, you know, dropping three-pointers and – you know, running up the court with the ball in their hand like they're point guards, like he's a point guard, but, you know, he's just setting really solid screens and just diving to the rim hard, and he's finishing around the basket with efficiency, and every once in a while he'll show off like a nifty little post move and spin. I mean, he looks as good as he ever has, and you just consider that he's coming back from injury. And if you're Utah and you're making this playoff push, you know, right now they're still on the outside looking in, but that eighth spot is still within reach. And it just seems like Rudy Gobert just keeps getting better as he gets into better and better shape here. And so you're excited if you're the Jazz, just seeing what Gobert is doing and sort of understanding, like, all right, his best basketball could still be in front of him. And Donovan Mitchell, by the way, has yet to find that rookie wall. He probably jumped right over it during the dunk contest.
Yeah, he didn't have a big game tonight, actually. Just finished with 19 points on 6 of 16 shooting. But he did manage to get to the free throw line, 6 of 8 at the line. 1 of 7 from three-point range. Obviously, his long-range shooting hasn't been a strength for him. You know, he's been inconsistent when it comes to the long ball. But still a good showing from everybody else. Joe Ingles with 18 points on 7 of 15 shooting, 4 of 8 from three-point range. And again, this is something we talked about the last time we brought up the Jazz game. Able to control the pace so well. Orlando isn't exactly a hot team. They've struggled offensively and been inconsistent throughout most of the season. But they do have some capable offensive players there. A guy like Nick Vucevic only finished with 15 points. He's a guy who can space the floor, take Gobert out of his comfort range. And they weren't able to capitalize on that. So the Jazz really did manage to impact the rest of the Magic's players there. And again, Gordon and Fournier going a combined 8 of 36. That's horrific. I mean, that is really, really bad for them. So Utah playing some really strong brand of defense and looking like they can make a really strong push. At this point, just a game and a half out of the eighth seed, which is being currently held onto by the Denver Nuggets. So
I think they get it. I think they get it.
Yeah.
They
look really good, to be honest with you. And I know a lot of Jazz fans listening to this show will probably be happy to hear that we both think that they'll be able to pull ahead and get the A seed at the end of the season.
Some other scores from around the league. Miami beat Phoenix 125-103, taking care of business there in Miami. They move up to seventh place in the Eastern Conference. And San Antonio barely hangs on against the Memphis Grizzlies. They only won by 2 points, 198. San Antonio has been in a bit of a slide, but they get that much-needed win. They're hanging on, for now, to that fifth seed in the West. The NBA could be taking some steps to eliminate the one-and-done rule. We'll talk about that next, but first, a quick reminder that Locked On NBA has moved to a new five-day-a-week format. Think of it as your bite-sized briefing for the most important stories around the league. So subscribe to Locked On NBA on iTunes or your favorite podcasting app, the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. We'll preview the biggest games of the night later on. But we got to talk about this Kawhi Leonard situation, David. There is tension, as you said at the start of the show, trouble in paradise. There's tension between Kawhi and the Spurs that has been going on for a few weeks now that we're all well aware of. And recently it's come out that Kawhi Leonard isn't happy with his situation with Jordan Brand. Kawhi has been a Jordan athlete for a few years now, and he apparently turned down their latest offer for a contract extension that would pay him somewhere around the range of $20 million over the life of the contract, and he turned it down. So look, Kawhi, it's a little turbulent in the land of Kawhi right now. Is he looking maybe to – look, I'm not going to get on here and start recklessly speculating, but I kind of am.
Do it.
I kind of am. I mean,
do it.
This is a guy who sounds like he's sort of trying to shake free of mom and dad's place. I don't know. Like, he wants to get his own apartment maybe on the other side of town, do some experimenting, kind of try to maybe find himself. Who is he, you know, outside of where he's always been for his whole life? Like, he's been in the Spurs organization, and we've always viewed Kawhi Leonard as this perfect android created by and for the Spurs organization. And with that, these expectations of who he is and how he should act come with it. You know, we thought of him like, okay, he's the heir of Tim Duncan. He is in the mold of Manu Ginobili and Tony Parker. He's part of that club. And maybe that was unfair to put those expectations on him. I mean, this is a dude that is, when he's healthy, is the third best player in the league. Maybe he wants to act accordingly. Maybe he wants to be a superstar. Maybe that's what he wants to go find. He doesn't want to be this quiet, shy guy that everybody makes him out to be. He wants to be he's kind of a caricature when people talk about Kawhi. Maybe he's just like, look, I am not that guy. I want to be bigger than just, you know, Jordan Brand's second athlete behind Russell Westbrook. I want to be bigger than this. I want to be bigger than just, you know, small forward version Tim Duncan 2.0 for San Antonio. You look at what happened with Kyrie Irving in Cleveland. He wanted more, and the Cavs organization couldn't give it to him. Again, reckless speculation here, but maybe Kawhi can't get everything he wants out of the Spurs organization.
Look, I think that's certainly fair. I mean, we've always viewed the 20-something years of the Popovich era and the success that they've had as a result. And we've always assumed that they can fix any situation. But this isn't the first time a player, albeit in very minor cases, role players that weren't able to fit into their system, guys like Dwayne Dedmon, Richard Jefferson, you know, guys that just couldn't find a way to exist there. It's not for everybody. It brings out the best in a lot of players, and that's fine. But that doesn't mean that any player is going to continue to thrive, which isn't to say that Kawhi hasn't grown as a player in San Antonio, but he may want something different. He may want something more than what San Antonio can provide. And that's, you know, we're kind of forgetting the history there, where Tim Duncan, as a free agent, mm-hmm. was actually actively courted by a number of teams and was this close to signing with the Orlando Magic years ago. So it's not the first time that a star player in San Antonio has flirted with other teams and other potential suitors. And so this might be another example of that. Maybe we assumed that Kawhi was going to be this perfect disciple of Greg Popovich. He might want something different than what we've understood from him. And I don't think there's anything wrong with this. As if he's trying to break out and get a little bit more money for himself, that's fine. It sucks for Spurs fans, but to be honest with you, that makes things a lot more interesting for 29 other teams that might be able to capitalize on that.
If you're Kawhi also, I mean, you're looking at the Spurs roster, you're like, okay, Dejounte Murray, nice guy, nice player. Don't know exactly what he is. Tony Parker, Manu, they're out the door sooner rather than later, right? LaMarcus Aldridge is my number two, and he's 32 years old. Like, do I have a shot at playing at beating Houston or Golden State right now in the Western Conference? And who knows what happens with LeBron this summer too? So if you're Kawhi, you got to think about this. You don't want, I mean, he's already won one championship, but I'm sure he doesn't want that to be the only one he ever wins, right? So, let's get to this next story. Adam Silver and the NBA are exploring options to end one and done. And this has been obviously a topic of debate for years. And according to this report by ESPN's Brian Windhorst, the solution that's sort of being talked about right now could include establishing relationships with top prospects as early as when they're in high school, and trying to just help them establish good habits and best practices to succeed in the NBA. What was that Jonathan Abrams book he wrote about this? Boys to Men? Among Men? Or something. Boys to Men is a band. So in that, I thought about that book when I was reading this report, because in that book, it talks a lot about like how it's not just about talent, right? Like you could be LeBron, you could be Kobe and come out of high school and win. But there's a lot of guys who were super talented, but just couldn't get used to the lifestyle and all the adjustments that come with being an NBA player. And it seems like the NBA is sort of taking note of that and said, okay, we're going to help these guys kind of, the idea at least would be to help them kind of come along. And of course there would be involvement in getting guys into the G League and sort of, you know, increasing salaries at that level to sort of make that a viable option. And then of course, allowing them to just go straight to the NBA from high school. So this could be coming down. It looks like Adam Silver at least has been thinking about this a lot, and some changes could be made down the road.
I'm all for it. I think the NCAA and the collegiate system absolutely, you know, exploits young athletes, making billions off of their talent, their ability. And if they get hurt or something happens, they don't get compensated for it. And coaches have the freedom and the luxury to transfer to schools, to take new jobs whenever they want, leaving kids high and dry. We all believe or want to believe in this purity of a fatherly figure going into an inner city, you know, school and plucking these young players and kind of providing guidance and helping them achieve their dreams of making it to the NBA. Bullcrap. It's about making money for the players, the colleges, and for the colleges and the coaches. Everybody but the players get a chance mm-hmm. to make money. Eventually they might, but getting the way into the NBA is a much more difficult process. This, if it is implemented, is much better. It gives them the kind of guidance that these players need. So much of it is you know, about them figuring out how to manage their money, how to make the leap, how to find how to work at the NBA level. And that's something they're not even figuring out in college, to be honest with you. The one and done system, we think of it as being able to give them a better opportunity to highlight their skills and everything else. They're not learning the habits that they need to in order to make it in the NBA. They're being exploited by these big name coaches in order to help them pad their resume a little bit further. The reality is that kids go there as 19-year-olds. They don't watch any film. They don't do the kinds of things they need to do in order to make it in the NBA. Look, for Jazz fans, it's probably the reason why a guy like Ben Simmons probably doesn't deserve the Rookie of the Year award, because, you know, he got the advantages of that, mm-hmm. you know, this year without having been a rookie the way Donovan Mitchell is. But anyway, as far as the one-and-done system is concerned, I'm absolutely for abolishing it. If you want to play college, that's fine. If that's what you want to spend 4 years at whatever university or college, that's up to you. But it's not for
everyone. Let's think beyond just the super uber talented guys that are just the one and done guys, you know, the Carl Anthony Towns who just go to right. Kentucky for a year just to get to the NBA, whatever. They're taking valuable scholarships away from people who would actually use them. I mean, the idea that they are on scholarship is a complete joke. They don't go to class. And if they do, they're not graduating. Like it doesn't. And right. once they get to the NBA, they could conceivably make enough money where they don't need to necessarily have a free scholarship, you know, like that's the least of their concerns at that point is student loans. So, right. you know, you think about maybe those two and one star athletes, right, who have to kind of rely on being walk-ons sometimes. Sure. They could start getting those scholarships and sort of, and actually benefiting from that, you know, and being an actual amateur athlete benefiting from a scholarship, and they may never go pro, but they'll have the benefit of a scholarship. They won't have the student loans, and they'll be able to play on that sort of scholarship and then stay in school for 3 or 4 years. And that creates a better on-court product, I think, at least, or at least a more truthful one. So let's get to a couple quick points here before we move on to tonight's games. JJ Redick, according to a report, wants to stay in Philadelphia, but the 76ers will look to sign an A-list free agent first. That's not a shock, but to talk about the salary implications of this, J.J. Redick's making $23 million this season. The 76ers are going to have about $31 million in cap space next season. We've heard the LeBron James rumors, obviously. Whether it's LeBron or another A-list player, or just maybe a player that's better than J.J. Redick, they're going to go after that. But I could see Redick coming back to Philly either way. You know, I do – like the Redick contract is a one-year $23 million contract. Do you think maybe Philadelphia looked ahead and said, we're going to overpay the crap out of J.J. Redick to make good? And then maybe he'll give us a little hometown discount next season after we sign LeBron James or whoever.
How old is Redick at this point? He's in your early 30s. I mean, he's how much longer can you re-sign him for? Like, and if Philadelphia's window is actually, you know, considering their young core of Simmons and Joel Embiid and Dario Saric, I mean, is Redick a guy who realistically fits into that? What if Markelle Fultz figures it out? Yeah. What if he develops his shot?
He just really adds that 3-point shooting that they don't have. But I see your point. But like, unless they're able to find that 3-point shooting elsewhere, I think I could see them doing it. Like, I could see them, if they get the right free agent too, and they take their window from 3 or 4 years from now to right now, that would make sense to bring back Redick and have that 3-point shooting element to your offense. He's having a good year right now.
Yeah, he is. Career highs and lots of things, but he's pushing 34.
Yeah.
You know, do you really want to sign him for another 3 or 4 years, which is probably what it would take to get him?
Yeah, and if you're Redick, do you really want to move on from Philadelphia? It sounds like in the story he likes being in Philly, so maybe he takes a major hometown discount. Maybe he invested that $23 million in a really smart way. Brandon Ingram will be out at least a week with a groin injury. That does not sound good. Tough loss for the Lakers, who have been surging lately. Brandon Ingram's been one of their best players. He's averaging 17 points a game on 57% shooting and to go along with 7.8 rebounds and 5.5 assists since the All-Star break. So small sample size, but he's been on fire. And it just sucks for Ingram at this stage in his career to sort of have to take a back seat while he's having such a run like this.
You know, I don't see it as that big a deal, to be honest with you. He's going to continue to develop. You know, if it's just a week, hopefully he can find a way to bounce back, give everybody else on that roster an opportunity, guys like Julius Randle and everybody else. So I don't think it's necessarily as devastating as it might seem. It's not like the Lakers are in a legitimate playoff chase or anything like that. They're not really playing for anything at this point this year.
Yeah. Potential preview of what could be a first-round matchup in the Western Conference playoffs. We're going to talk about that next. But don't forget that in addition to the daily Locked On NBA show, the Locked On Podcast Network also has a daily show for your favorite NBA team. So go ahead and subscribe to your team's channel on iTunes or your favorite podcasting app. By subscribing to both Locked On NBA and your favorite team show, you'll be covered with everything that you need to know. Maybe you're a Miami Heat fan. Make sure you're subscribed to Locked On Heat, which is what David and I host on a daily basis, in addition to Locked On NBA, the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. All right, let's get to tonight's best games, and we'll start with that potential playoff preview that I mentioned. Houston at Oklahoma City on TNT. The Thunder are 1-0 versus the Rockets this season. They've got another game later on in April, but this is a game that isn't going to have playoff seeding implications at this point. Houston is going to be one of these top two seeds in the West. But Oklahoma City, they're sliding lately. There is a very likely chance that this could be a first-round preview.
Absolutely. Yeah, the Thunder are just a game ahead of Denver, holding on to the seventh seed for dear life in the Western Conference. And Denver is obviously, like I said earlier, at the eighth seed, mm-hmm. and they're playing that night as well versus the Dallas Mavericks. So it could very well be a case where the Thunder slide out. Could you imagine if the Thunder slide to the eighth seed and Utah is able to catapult them somehow and get into the seventh seed? That would be a really exciting matchup. The Thunder are in a weird place. They've struggled against bad teams lately, but they kind of take this pride in being able to knock off mm-hmm. the best teams in the NBA. To be honest with you, they're 1-1, I think, against, or 2-1 rather, against the Golden State Warriors. So they've matched up well with Golden State. I think they're 1-1 against the Raptors. I think they're 1-1 against the Celtics as well. So they kind of see themselves as being able to hold their own against the very best teams in the NBA. So I don't know that they're necessarily scared of going up against Houston. Obviously, the Russell Westbrook, James Harden connection goes back to their days together when they both played for Oklahoma City. So I'm curious to see how that works out there. It should be a really, really fun game.
Yeah, and when you have somebody like Paul George defensively, that he can muck up a lot of what Houston wants to do on offense. Yeah. You know, you put Paul George on either Harden or Chris Paul, and that could slow down what Houston's trying to do there. Obviously, the Andre Roberson injury has hurt the Thunder a lot, and I thought with Roberson and Paul George on the wing, they were as dangerous as anybody else to knock off the Warriors, just for the what they're able to do by forcing turnovers and get out in transition. And then if you're Roberson or Paul George, you steal the ball and find Russell Westbrook in transition, Russell Westbrook will score for you. So that was a very dangerous sort of trio and kind of strategy that they were able to lean into. But without Roberson, it's kind of a one-man show almost defensively, especially when we talk about forcing turnovers. But this Houston game will be interesting. You're right. I think the Thunder always they tend to get up for these games, and the fact that it's on TNT is just going to be really fun.
And it's at Oklahoma City. Mm-hmm. Now, the Thunder also recently signed Corey Brewer to kind of help make up for some of the lack of length defensively on this team.
I'm down for the Gators reunion. But there's no way. Like, I get, like, in theory, he's sort of Roberson-ish.
Nope.
But
he's no Andre Roberson. Roberson is a great player. Look, he can't score. Everybody knows about his free throw shooting and long range shooting problems. But as a defender, he's an elite level defender and really disrupts games with his ability. Corey Brewer is not that player. He probably never has been, and he's certainly not at this point in his career.
The next game we want to talk about is Miami at Washington. The Heat on the second night of a back-to-back traveling to Washington, D.C. Washington is 1-1 versus Miami this season. The Heat, of course, beating the Suns on Monday night, and they were able to rest their starters down the stretch of that game in what ended up being about a 20-point blowout. So hopefully that might help Miami in the second night.
Yeah, the Heat currently holding on to the seventh seed in the Eastern Conference. They're just two games back of the Wizards, who are holding on to the fifth seed. So this has definite Eastern Conference playoff implications. The Wizards still without John Wall. They've been kind of up and down without him. Bradley Beal has really turned it up a notch as a playmaker and scorer, and they've got some nice contributions from other players, but they can be beat. They've had some games there where they've had a problem scoring and defending, to be honest with you. So Miami, conversely, as we both know pretty well, has been fairly inconsistent. They've gotten some nice performance out of guys like Hassan Whiteside lately. Goran Dragic, their team's all-star, has stepped up, hasn't been a dominating presence, but at the same time has been fairly good and efficient of late. So it's going to be a case of who steps up for Miami. Now, they're going to have, I think, their full contingent of players. They're still without a couple of guys here, but Tyler Johnson returned to the lineup against Phoenix, and he could provide a boost offensively off the bench. I think Wayne Ellington's still going to be out this game, but he's due back. Bam Adebayo, their rookie, he's pretty good, although his minutes have been cut into lately. So it should be an interesting matchup. Miami has a lot of depth there. They just need somebody to step up on a nightly basis and go a little bit beyond what they normally provide in order to help carry this
team.
And
the matchup between Josh Richardson and Bradley Beal when the Wizards are on offense, that'll be interesting. Our final game we want to talk about is the second TNT game. It's New Orleans in LA to play the Clippers. The Clippers are they're in this mix for that eighth seed, right? They're right there with Utah and Denver. So that's kind of that trio that's there trying to battle for that last playoff spot. Currently, they're a half game back behind the Nuggets. But I mean, look, the team to watch here right now is the Pelicans. They're 8-2 in their last 10 games on an 8-game win streak, I believe. You look at the standings, you have to do a double take. The Pelicans are in fourth place in the Eastern Conference. I mean, Anthony Davis, of course, is playing out of his mind. We talked about him a lot on last week's episode. But New Orleans, they're trying to keep this roll going.
Every time you think about this team and what they've been able to overcome with the loss of DeMarcus Cousins, and look, a lot of people, including our own David Locke, have suggested that DeMarcus Cousins is not the kind of player that we think he might be. The numbers have kind of shown that on-off, the Pelicans actually thrive without Cousins on the floor. I know he's got his issues defensively at times. I'm not so quite ready to write him off, but at the same time, you do have to question how he fits together with Anthony Davis, who's just been phenomenal. Like his attacking mentality and his approach to every game have just been incredibly dominant. And it's paying off for the Pelicans, who look like they could be a legitimate troublemaker in the playoffs. I don't think anybody's ready to see them as a legitimate title contender, but they can do some damage there. They could beat up a team. They could make it difficult for somebody to advance past the second round. Or maybe even if they're able to win a first round matchup against, say, a San Antonio or a Minnesota, depending on where those final seedings end up. It just makes it difficult, you know, and that's the whole thing. In the Western Conference, it's such a bloodbath at every level. There's no easy out there. Even if it's a four-game sweep, it could wind up being a very difficult one where it taxes you physically as you move up to each and every round. So the Pelicans look like they're pretty good this year.
Anthony Davis right now, league pass MVP. I mean, I don't have any – there's not a player I enjoy watching more right now than Anthony Davis. I think this season, maybe like early season Giannis was like up there for me when he was just playing out of his mind. He was kind of having a similar run to what Anthony Davis is doing right now. But there is no answer for Anthony Davis. There's just – I don't care if you're the Warriors, the Rockets, or whoever. There's just – you don't have an answer for Anthony Davis, and that just – that makes every game a fun one to watch when he's involved. That's all we have for today. You can subscribe to Locked On NBA on iTunes or your favorite podcasting app. We will be back next Tuesday John Corrales and Jake Madison. They've got you on Locked On NBA tomorrow. Thank you for listening. Thanks for joining me, David.
You got it, Wes.